Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
All right, welcome to another Future Socks, an episode of Future Socks. I don't even know what it's like the
podcast.
It's I guess it's just a regular old Future Socks podcast. Yeah. It is Fan Appreciation Day here at the Rate, and so Elijah, Dylan, and I are here to go ahead and do some interviews today. We were lucky enough to be invited down here to do that. There's CHGO's down there, Lockdown's down there, 108's down there, Sox Machine's right next to us, Sox on 35th is over there. There's a conglomeration of different guys here. How excited are you about being here to do this kind of thing?
Yeah, this is awesome. First of all, huge shout out to the White Sox, the PR team, and they're just inviting us out here to do this. This is a really cool opportunity for us. Obviously, you know, the three of us and James Fox and the rest of our crew at Future Sox, we cover the game all the time. We're all watching the White Sox. We're all watching the minor leagues. But being able to come out to the stadium and just get invited to talk to some people, we've got some really cool interviews coming up. Ian and I are going to be talking with Connor McKnight and Gene Watson. Connor McKnight, sideline reporter for the White Sox. Gene Watson is the director of player personnel. Great intel coming up from those guys, and just being here in general with the other people in the White Sox world. And you know, last game of the season, my only two games this season have been opening day and then Fan Appreciation Day, so pretty cool to be out here for the end of the season.
Yeah, you know, this is absolutely amazing what the White Sox are doing, because, you know, we cover the game, but at the end of the day, we're all fans too. And, like, being able to be here and be in the Craft Cave, and, you know, John Triffin's right there, Connor McKnight is going to be joining us. Like, this is just a really cool experience, and we're very grateful, and hopefully this is just the start of things to come in the future.
Yeah, it should be fun. And, you know, the White Sox finishing up the year here, hoping to stay under 100 losses. That would be awesome. Either way, though, a 20-win jump from last season, it might seem not that cool because of how rough last season was. Do you know how many teams jump 20 wins in a season? It doesn't happen often. Yeah. So, yes, the bar was very low, but there's been a lot of growth this season, and I think when we look at the farm system, when we look at the future of the organization in general, it's hard to not be excited about the direction of things and being able to be here for it, being involved with it. We're just excited, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately for Dylan down there, for his fantasy squad, it looks like the White Sox might possibly have a little bit better of a chance today, because Michael King doesn't seem to be starting today. So
I'm actually playing Elijah in the playoffs right now, and if I can sub in Cam Schlittler for Michael King, I think I'll beat him. So I'm just going to hold that over him for the next year and a half.
I might be in some trouble. We'll see. Yeah. But yeah, it's great to be here. We're excited, and we've got two really awesome interviews coming up for you guys. Yep. We're going to get a lot of intel just on, you know, the organization this season, looking towards the offseason, all the different potential moves that could be coming, and just everything coming up for the White Sox. Like, there's a lot of optimism in the organization. You talk to guys from players we've talked to this season to, you know, the personnel we're talking to the reporters, to the media, right? There's a lot of people that believe in some of this core that's starting to establish themselves. We've seen guys like Kyle Teal, like Colson Montgomery come up and just shine this year in their rookie seasons, and you'd hope that that's the start of more to come. You know, we've talked about this a lot on both of our podcasts. Like, we haven't really even seen the young pitching start to come yet, right? We've seen spurts of it. Yeah, we've seen Grant Taylor, Jordan Leisure in the bullpen. Obviously, Shane Smith has established himself as a clear starter for the team. But we still haven't seen almost all of the pitching, you know, talent and prospects yet. So we got the taste on the hitting side this year of all these rookies. And next season, we're going to get a lot of young pitchers, from Noah Schultz to Hagen Smith to Tanner McDougal to Christian Opper and everything in between. Like, there's a lot more of the young excitement that we saw this year coming up in 2026.
Yeah, I mean, you also toss on top of that, you know, you're hoping to see a jump from Braden Montgomery.
Yep,
I mean, you're going to see some of the guys from the hitting side coming up as well. Sam Antonacci, I mean, you've got some guys that are definitely making waves down in the minors as far as that goes. So, I mean, there's going to be a lot of movement here in the next year, and I think that the offseason is going to be really interesting.
Yeah, we're excited. It's gonna be a lot of fun to see where everything goes, and just keep following this team. And we appreciate everyone for tuning in, and we hope you really enjoy these interviews. It should be a good time.
Nice.
How you doing?
I'm
How's everything
well.
Going?
How are you guys?
Good. We appreciate you doing all this. This is an awesome setup they got going for us. This is cool.
A very, very cool.
You want me to just?
And we're hoping it gets even more of this in the future.
I would imagine that it will. Yeah. I know they're into this.
This is cool for sure. I was talking with Scotty. It's just like this is the next step of the baseball media world.
We've talked about it a little too.
So yes, it is. It's cool, man. And appreciate all your support this year too.
Of course,
it's been awesome. It's been a good year.
Thanks for everything you guys do.
Yeah.
Hey, of course.
All right.
So how do you feel that the season's gone for you?
For me, it's gone fast. I can't even tell you how quickly it's gone. Chris Withers is our producer on the television side, and Brooke and I we talk a lot about just how it feels like maybe it was a week ago or 7 weeks ago at most that we started. And, you know, I think a lot of that for me is, you know, it's a new job, it's a new media, it's, you know, a whole bunch of different responsibilities that I haven't had before. So, you know, the first 3 months is just learning. And when I say learning, I mean just copying what Brooke Fletcher does, because she's amazing in her job, and I felt really quickly like if I just do the same things she does, I'm going to be okay here because she's great. And thankfully, that's kind of worked out. I looked into the camera at the right end for the most part throughout the season, so that's been a plus. It's crazy how quickly it goes when you're in it every day and kind of learning as you go. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. And then for you, like, stepping into this role now with a team that's kind of taken a big step this season, how do you feel like it's just been watching this team grow from into a season that, you know, hasn't been a playoff team, right? But a team that has shown a lot of steps forward this season.
In a lot of ways, man, it really does almost feel like a 500 ball club from the outside looking at from the everyday going to work of it, you know? Yeah. Last season was really hard on a lot of us. It really was. And that's not that I'm not listening to poor me or whatever. I get it. But it's more difficult covering a team that struggles the way it did and had the issues that it had. Being here and kind of watching the maturation of some young players, you know, the promotions of a lot of young prospects, it's a new story to cover every day. And when you've got that, you guys know, but when you've got that as kind of a media entity and being able to kind of like move on to that next thing or have that brand new shiny object, they're players, they're humans, but you know what I'm talking about. Like, it's great. Kyle Teal gets called up and we get to do that every day for a while. It's a completely different field in 2024, and it's been really welcome.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
So what has been your favorite moment of the year so far?
I would say one singular moment. See, now I'm trying to cheat.
Immediately
my mind goes to cheating. I think it's been – I did the Phillies series with Steve. Yeah. I did three in a row with Steve, and that's always really fun. You know, play-by-play is a passion, and I really enjoy doing it. I hope I'm getting better at it every time I go out there. That's kind of my hope. And to slide in for a full series is great. You know, I do some Big Ten baseball as well, and it's a ton of fun, but you're always parachuting into one game. That's kind of the industry term. And doing that is very hard, right? You don't have the rhythm of the last couple of days. And sure, I've been here with the team, and that helps a ton. But to do 3 days in a row and kind of build those stories and in game three, know what we did and didn't get to in game one, so you don't feel like you're, you know, rewashing the same laundry and bringing it out there on Sunday that you did on Friday. That was a really cool, you know, set of three to be able to do for me personally anyway.
Yeah. When you look at this team, kind of, you know, we're a week out from the end of the season, last home game today. Looking into 2026, do you feel like there is, you know, a number of players that have kind of locked up spots and really solidified themselves in this core going into next year?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way you put it, because you guys talk about positional depth and everything like that a lot. I know I'm first time, long time here sitting in person anyway. Yes, but also, how do you qualify first and third with Vargas and me? You know what I mean? And Will has been really clear that he loves the up the middle with Colson and Chase Mydroth right now, and everybody loves what they've seen so far, but Sam Antonacci and William Bregoia, and, you know, there are other guys that play those spots specifically. So I think the positionality of it maybe not is as flexible as perhaps we'd have thought coming into this season, But the groups themselves seem pretty rigid, right? Like, I think we know who's going to man or, like, kind of spread two spots among three players kind of thing.
Yeah.
The outfield is a completely different mix, right? Because I think there's an entirely – there's a world where they're looking for buyers on Andrew Benintendi. There's a world where Mike Tauchman is wanted by somebody else. And there's absolutely worlds where these guys are here next year as well. And Chris has talked about bringing Luis Robert back. And also, I think you can make the case, and the front office has talked about this, that an outfield that's primarily in 2026, Benintendi, Robert, and Tauchman, with a fourth guy kind of sprinkled in that may or may not be Brooks Baldwin, probably doesn't serve the 27 and 28 White Sox as best it can, right? So I think infield, yes. Outfield, no. And the catching, yeah, for sure, right? Yeah. I mean, like that's pretty easy to
do. So following up on that, when you talk about the infield being really deep, we've talked about this all the time because in the system, you look at every level.
Yeah.
Bonnemer, obviously, with an incredible season. Bergoglio, Antonacci, Haral Perez. And then you've obviously got Billy Carlson now on the way. Really deep group there. You mentioned the outfield. We've talked about this a lot. Like, if you were to move off of one or even two of those three veterans, right?
Sure.
Where does that addition come from? Do you see it more as of a free agency angle, or do you think there's internal options? Do you think Brooks Baldwin gets everyday reps because he's been really good in the second half, or is it still an external addition to that outfield potentially?
I would imagine it's external addition. I would think that, you know, listen, this front office, Brian Bannister talked the other day, right? And obviously he's on the pitching side, but I think the philosophy kind of bleeds through. They want to be reclamation central, right? They want to be able to bring in a guy, rehab that swing with Ryan Fuller now, or rehab the pitching side of things, and then spin that guy off if that makes most sense. That's still the area they're going to be, I think, for veteran outfielders. And I think that's an okay place to be. Let me throw this out to you. I was talking about this with Len and DJ yesterday before the game. If you signed Cedric Mullins to a one-year pillow contract kind of deal to be your fourth outfielder, to figure some things out, to play in a corner, to play center field, to do, you know, that kind of... Do you hate it? I don't know that I hate it. Obviously, we don't know what the money is. Yeah. You know, I'm telling you, it's going to be in the White Sox price range or whatever, and maybe that's a thing. Maybe you could be in a market like that, and I'm interested in that. I really am.
Yeah. Is there a world where you could see a trade being the option in the outfield if you want to move off of some of the depth on the pitching side? You have the ability with, you know, we'll get to the pitching in a second, but like, you've got a number of guys competing for rotation spots, young guys coming up already on the team. Could you move off of that depth for an outfielder that might be a little more established? Because you look at the free agency market, you've got Kyle Tucker and Cody Bellinger.
Yep.
Probably not realistic targets for the White Sox.
Probably not.
Beyond that, it's a lot of reclamation guys.
It's Cedric Mullins.
So would you prefer the option of moving pitching depth for a potential outfielder that feels a little more safe?
Honestly, I would do both at this point. I don't think it's one or the other. Yeah. I think you have to be, and Gene Watson talks about this a lot, who I think
we're talking
guys,
to him later,
you guys talk to him. It's talent acquisition, right? And there's only so many avenues with which or through which you can acquire that talent. And I don't think the White Sox going into 26 are of a mindset that they can. There's only one way to acquire said talent. Okay. And if you've got a pitching surplus, and I'm not saying that they necessarily think they do, right? It's a tenet. There's a lot of injured guys coming back, and you have to make sure that you're good shepherds of those innings, right? And that probably means more veteran presence in terms of being able to soak up some of them and rely on them. It probably means Mike Vassell's throwing another 75, 80 something innings next year, something like that. But you also have to make sure that you're selling high, right? I mean, to be crass about it, these are people we're talking about, but that's what this is. And I think probably trading one of those pieces makes a lot of sense, especially if you're replenishing in an area that you need, which is outfield. And I think it's both, to be honest with you. I really do.
Speaking for myself, and I'm sure for a lot of the fan base, I think that probably one of the main concerns when you talk about having Robert Tauchman, Benintendi, and bring in Cedric Mullins is I worry about health in the outfield.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're missing a good chunk of games from all of those guys, and it's, you know, no disrespect to them. It's just, you know, there have been health issues, and I don't know how you move off that without getting younger in the outfield.
I would absolutely agree. And whether that's, you know, whether that's losing your everyday center fielder in Robert for a good long time, I mean, that's a big defensive ask. And, you know, I know you guys have talked about this too, and I harp on this a lot. When you have a young pitching core, right, I would like that outfield to be really good. You know, I do. I want that outfield to be really good. And I think we take for granted, or we've been in an area for a while now where we take corner outfield defense for granted. Like, stick Ryan Braun out there. It's fine. I don't think it is. Like, I don't think it is with a developing pitching core. I want them to know that when that ball goes up in the air and it feels like you got him off the end of the barrel, I want them to feel like that's an out. And then they can keep working like that as opposed to having to work over extra counts. The reason I don't mention that on the infield so much, only in this, because, like, it's Colson and it's Chase, and you kind of know the guys who are going to be there, right? Outfield is a little bit more of a mixed bag, and I think even defensively with the veterans they've had, you know, the day we're talking, Mike Tauchman just made like 3 5-star catches in the outfield, but that's got to continue, right? Yeah. And that hasn't been the case for Andrew, and you need more of that, I think. Yeah.
On the pitching side, getting your take on this, just kind of wrapping on the that end of things, when you look at this rotation, you've got 8 to 12 guys that are young and going to be in position to at least compete for a rotation spot.
Yeah.
When you look at the team, from you obviously keep up with the minors like we do, the major league team, who are some of the guys you kind of have your eye on that you think can legitimately claim a rotation spot in spring training this year?
So break camp with, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I think, well, first of all, if I ask Chris Getz this question one more time, I think he blocks my number. I'm not entirely sure. Yeah, it's probably one more time and it blocks my number. I would think that Davis Martin and Shane Smith are set for rotation spots coming out of camp next year. We just talked about trading players. I think you and I, all of us, have talked about the possibility of Davis Martin being a trade piece. It will break my heart, but if happens, it happens. I think those are two set pieces. I think the possibility still exists that a guy like Noah Schultz could break camp with a rotation spot. I think it would be very difficult, just given the injury situation and working him back, but I think the possibility exists. I think with the injured guys, you know, with a guy like Drew Thorpe or Mason, I mean, these guys, they're pushed back. They're not going to be there right at this point. I think Sean Burke and Jonathan Cannon have worked really hard to get themselves back to it, but I don't know there yet either, right? I don't know that there's as many, with as many potentials as you have, I don't know that there's a lot of guaranteed at all, right? I just really don't. And I think that'll be one of the things I was really glad to see, and I really believe in this, and I know James doesn't, but that's fine. He could be wrong about one thing. Position camp battles matter, not because of what a guy does on the field, right, the production that ensues, but because that guy got into a fight in camp and won it. That mindset matters, that coaching matters, the ability to say, hey, Ian, you won your job. I can't tell you what that does for players and what it does for the guys who even don't. Look at Chase Mytroth. He didn't win a job in camp. Then he went to AAA, murdered people with a baseball bat for a month, and has now become the guy that's, you know, doing pretty well here at the big leagues. That all matters. It really matters. And if you could do that for the starting pitching group and some of the bullpen spots, I like that. I want that.
Yeah. All right. Well, it looks like you're getting the hook here.
No!
So,
going to the bullpen.
One more. We've had you on Future Sox once before. Twice?
We'll get you in the offseason, too. We would love to have you on.
Yeah, so we'd love to have you on again, especially, you know, I know you love digging into the prospects and doing the, you know, the road to the show. I forget.
Road to the rate, I think is what we're calling it.
Road to the rate, that's what
it's the video game in which I cannot hit.
Yeah, fair enough. Do you have anything that you wanted to piggyback off of that last question?
Yeah, I was going to ask the last thing following up on that was,
yeah, of course,
is there a reliever or two that you kind of are pinpointing? Because I think we look at the roster, you see Vassell, Taylor, Leisure, Wilson. Stephen Wilson. I think those are the four that we look at and say, okay, those guys are probably in the bullpen. You never know, but probably. Is there one or two guys you're pinpointing, whether it's minors or young guys in the bigs, that you think have the kind of the edge and are in the spot there?
I really like the step up that Jordan Leisure has made over the last couple of weeks. As we're all talking, last homestand, 100%. I'm not sure when you're going to release this, but it's meaningful. It's very, very different here. Relievers are so, because I would have talked, if we'd have talked 6 months ago, I'd have said Addison Coffee and just drop the mic and walk away, right? And then it hadn't worked out for him this season. I don't know that I can give you a name on that one. Like you guys, I like Phil Fox, and that's an interesting thing, but I don't know if it's like, you know, whatever, like April, you know, for that kind of thing. I think with the relievers too, and this is where we get back to the organizational philosophy. I think for them right now, going into April, bringing in more Penn Murphys, even though it didn't work, is probably more valuable for them than promoting some of the young guys right away. Save for, and even when you do that, we can get back to what I was just talking about. You bring in a guy like that, a veteran, and Phil Fox beats him out for a job. Awesome. Yeah. He won a job. He's on a big league roster. now go strike guys out, right? And I think there's value to that too, even if you are kind of using a veteran as a, you know, as a shield, a human shield for a little bit, right?
Is there a world a high-end closer is brought in? Because the market for agency, I'm not sure you've looked at it, but it's insanely stacked.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
But I know, how do I say this without, I don't think so, but I know there are those who would like more high-end options toward the back end and not have to rely on Leisure and Taylor the way that they have. And not to say that they can't handle it, but it's a lot, right? So I would not be surprised if there are people asking for it from within, and whether that can match up with, you know, because guys got to want to come here. The money's got to be right. Suites, you know, all that kind of stuff. The perks, they all got to be there. It's a tough deal to close, and after all, this is still going to be a team that won, hopefully, 63 games by the end of the year. And are you getting a high-end closer if you're a 63-win team coming off of it, you know? Yep.
Connor, you're the man. Really
appreciate you guys having me.
We'll definitely,
so
we'll definitely connect this offseason. I'm looking forward to it, man.
Same.
Awesome. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Tons of fun.
From Chicago, yeah, appreciate you joining, man. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, definitely, that'd be awesome. Yeah,
appreciate that. So, Gene, how's the year going for you? How you feeling as the year's winding down? How do you feel that the talent performed this year?
We're getting better. I don't think that if you focus on the wins and losses on the field, it feels that way. Even though, you know, we're 17 games better than last year, but there have been a lot of really good things when you talk about. You know, Colson Montgomery and Kyle Teal and Edgar Caro and Mydroth and some of the young pitching, Shane Smith. You know, we feel like we're moving in the right direction. You know, we're continuing every day to examine the vehicles to acquire good talent. You know, it's not always easy for young players to come to the major league level and perform right away. You've seen signs of it. But what we're most excited about is what the ceiling of this core could potentially be, blending in what's coming and just – you know, next year, our players being comfortable, you know, knowing what to expect. You know, when you come to the big leagues, there's no guarantees. You don't know what to expect. And so just that comfort level is going to be a lot better for our guys next year.
Yeah. When you look at the organization as a whole, you know, looking at this core, right, the past couple of years, a lot of changes within the international scouting side, the amateur scouting side, just bringing talent in. You've got a lot of guys in the system now, you know, from these past few draft classes that are starting to really make a name for themselves, come up to the big league club. How do you feel that the organization has just grown from a both amateur and international scouting side?
It's been great. And you know, as I've said, what's really encouraging is the way that our amateur scouting department, pro scouting department, international scouting department, research and development, sports science, player development, the way we're all kind of working together in lockstep and communicating. And the one thing that Chris has done an amazing job of is bringing in people that have very strong relationships within the industry, with agents, with other organizations. And those are important when the vehicles to acquire players is becoming tougher and tougher. Those relationships are oftentimes going to win the ties. And so, you know, we're not taking a bow. We're not even, you know, close to where we want to be. The goal is to win a world championship, but with our people and the processes and the way we
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
We communicate and the relationships we have in the game, we feel good about the direction we're moving right now.
Yeah. So baseball as a whole, when you look in the scouting side of the world, there's a lot of shift away from the in-person scouting. You've seen a lot of teams like, oh, some of their in-person scouting staff, a lot move more towards the video, towards the analytics side of things. How do you feel that the Whites, first of all, what's your take on that? And then how do you think the White Sox kind of blend those two sides of the in-person end and more of the technology side of scouting?
Well,
it's all the information is important, and I would rather have, you know, all the information and not need it than need it and not have it. Yep. And our scouts are incredible with the relationships. Every yep. time they go into a major league ballpark, you know, they send emails on all the information that they're getting. And when you're talking about building a culture in your clubhouse, like, you want to know everything about the guy that's coming in, not just the ability, but you know, what's around that player, what's the support system, what's the heart and the mind of the player. And so oftentimes that's where, you know, people can make mistakes, is just going merely on the R&D or merely on the scouting. I think it's all-encompassing, and we're certainly in lockstep with that yeah. situation.
It seems like with the fact that all these other teams are kind of jettisoning all their actual scouts and boots on the ground everywhere, that gives the White Sox kind of an edge above everybody else with the fact that they're actually keeping these guys and realizing the value in having scouts at these locations.
100%. And not only that, but when I have my calls with my scouts, I'm involving the amateur side and connecting the dots on the kid when he was 16 at, you know, yeah. Naperville High School, and 20 at Vanderbilt, and 22 in A ball, you know, and like, you're connecting the dots on the journey, because oftentimes, you know, there's guys that are trending up, they're trending down, they've had injuries, they've had adversity in their life, and if you're doing your work on every player like we do, you can get a guy right at the right time that's trending or that's had some stuff along the way, and that can, you know, you looking past, you know, look at Brent Rooker, you know, who was sitting in AAA. Look at, you go back to Jake Arrieta, guys yeah. like Nelson Cruz, Justin Turner, Chris Taylor, like those guys, they had a tricky track record. And so, you know, we work tirelessly on communicating within every department. We empower our scouts. We empower our R&D. And, you know, we wake up every day communicating to give Chris the best information possible for him to make the best decisions possible.
Yeah, synergy is the new big buzzword. And we like it.
Yes, we got it. We
big
got
fan.
It.
Fan.
When you look at this this past draft class, obviously starting to attack each draft, really try to build out a core, was the emphasis placed on just, you know, the young high school guys, obviously starting the draft with Billy and with Jaden? How do you feel just about the way this draft went and just the way the last couple drafts have gone?
Super excited. And the one thing I will say is, like, you know, two kind of unique drafts, and you really didn't know what was going to go on up on top. And we have so many looks from so many different people, you know, on those higher picks, that it's very comforting when you're in a room. And I've said this today, you know, when we were in that draft room, there were seven major league players and a Hall of Famer. And so you're talking about the players and the heart and the mind of the player and the skill set and the ceiling and how are they going to assimilate to, you know, what we did last year in the draft and the players we have in our system and you know, how will it blend in with this core? And so we're super excited that, you know, a guy like Billy Carlson fell to us. We didn't expect it. So to have that kind of talent sitting there, Jaden Foskew, you know, a local kid, super talented. You know, I compare him to a Grady Sizemore from a skill set, tool set. And so just to have, you know, all the information from our R&D and sports science department, and then the vision of the player from our scouts and the communication that just continually going, when you get in that moment and you've ironed in the information, the decisions become a little clearer.
Yeah. How about the Rule 5 draft a little bit? This season, two guys on the roster that have become huge parts of this team and hopefully the future as well, with Shane Smith and Mike Vassell. What were some of the things that you know, the organization identified with those two? And was Vassell a consideration in the spot where, you know, you took Shane Smith at the top of that Rule 5?
Yeah, Vassell was on our board. What makes that so special is that, you know, you've got your scouting filters and then you've got your R&D filters. And when the two filters come together and you're aligned, like, it was unanimous. I mean, and that makes it, you know, really good. And when you look at the minor leagues, AAA to the major leagues, you look at all the good players that have come up in the last 2 years that have really struggled.
Yeah.
I mean, it's never been a wider gap from AAA to the major leagues. So you never really know. And you know, my belief on the Rule 5 is you're not talking about April 1. You're talking about August 1 when – you know, Will's got to manage it, and you've got no roster flexibility, and, you know, the catchers have to manage, you know, the end game. And so it takes a special makeup, special competitor, special aptitude to be able to survive in that climate. And Shane and Vassell certainly fit that, and they've done a tremendous job. And it was great work by everybody involved. And we're not taking a bow on that. And we got a long way to go, a lot of work to do. But we also we try to execute every vehicle to acquire talent that we can.
It's also okay to, you know, not take a bow, but to be happy about the fact that you brought in two guys in a Rule 5 draft were not secured by other teams, and you brought them in, and now they've been a huge part of this team.
We're very happy, and they're special people, too, which makes it great.
How do you see, just a little follow-up there, Vassell, in terms of the innings and the workload, do you see him sticking in this kind of Swiss Army bullpen role, or is there talks about something else for him?
I haven't talked to Banny about that. I would think so. I mean, you know, pitching is the currency of the game, and you want to maximize the ceiling. You know, if you look at the games this year where, you know, games we won when we had the lead first and games we lost when we didn't, I mean, like, that's a margin that we have to work on in 2026, and we're certainly going to focus on improving our pitching and you know, more leverage pitchers. But, you know, for now, I mean, he did a great job this year, and I'm sure that the plan moving forward will put him in as much leverage as possible.
Awesome. How much, I mean, judging by how much pitching the White Sox have in the minor leagues, how does that change what you're looking for when you go out and you look at the players that you're possibly going to be looking to acquire in the offseason, either via trade or via free agency?
I don't think you can ever have enough pitching, especially, you know, with the injury rate that it is today. The thing I would say is, like, whether it's free agency or the Rule 5 or minor league free agent, non-roster invites, whatever it is, like, there's context to all of it. Dollar amount, you know, fit, risk, medical risk, performance. Can we make this guy better? Do we see attributes in this pitcher that we think we can fix some things and make him better? But I don't think you can ever, ever have enough pitching.
Yeah. Hitting. How much input does Brian Bannister put into this the acquisition of pitching?
Huge. Him and Ryan Fuller on the hitting side. I mean, we lean on, you know, really everybody has input, and everybody has a different lens, a different experiences, different expertise. But Chris does an amazing job of empowering all of us to have a voice. But really, you know, we can't bring players in that, one, don't fit what we're trying to do in the clubhouse, two, don't fit the future ceiling of what we want to be moving forward, but three, Ryan on the hitting side and Banny on the pitching side have to believe that, one, we can sustain what's going on with this pitcher and this hitter, or two, there are some things that we believe that we can fix. And I will tell you, like, there are some guys that are really not performing this season, and we examine every one of them to make sure that there's not something we can do to fix them. So it's great communication.
Yeah. When you look at some of the pitchers, particularly this season, you know, we cover primarily the prospect side of things, so we're following guys as they go up from the levels. Two guys that have had kind of the biggest breakouts, you'd say, this year, Tanner McDougal and Christian Opper. Both those guys have taken a massive step forward. What do you see for those two of you, you know, what you've heard from Bannister, what you guys have talked about, for the trajectory of those two prospects?
Yeah, two great arms. And I saw Tanner in spring training and got to spend time with him and, you know, told him, I said, hey, I don't think you know how good you have a chance of being a fierce competitor. You know, he's from Las Vegas. Vegas kids are a little tougher, and he's a tough kid and very, very intelligent and competitor. And both of them, you know, very high ceilings. And I don't think you try to limit the ceiling or the floor of what they're trying to do. You just, you know, take what they've done. I get a lot of feedback from other organizations that go in and see our minor leaguers, and they call me afterward like, hey, man, and both those guys have been, you know, highly talked about, you know, within our organization and other organizations all season long.
That's awesome. For Tanner and a number of other guys, you've got a lot of pitchers, particularly on the pitching side this year, that are going to need to be, you know, 40-man protected going into Rule 5, which you talked about earlier. How do you guys approach the balance between protecting a pitcher and also trying to give yourself flexibility to make other additions to that 40-man roster in the offseason?
I think internal ceiling is always the most important. You know, when you've got the players within your system, you know, and it's not costing you players in trade or costing you dollars, you know, when you're losing players in the Rule 5 draft, it means you're doing a pretty good job in the acquisition aspect of an organization. And so it's unfortunate when you do lose them, but certainly, you know, we're always going to go internal the best we can to hold on our best players.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
You got
A few more. On the hitting side, we talked a little to Connor, and we've talked to other guys in the organization about just how much depth there is on the infield. A lot of guys, you know, at the big league level, obviously, you've got Colson coming up, you've got Meidroth, you brought in Mead, Lenin Sosa's taking a big step, Vargas. And then the minor league side, got a lot of guys taking steps this year, from Sam Antonacci to Haral Perez, William Bergoya. How do you kind of figure out how to fit guys in, and then what that competition does to just bring the best out of players and find those roster spots in the infield?
Well, competition's always good.
Yeah.
I think there's a couple things that go on there. Is like you're constantly evaluating the ceiling of the players at the major league level, and there's a time stamp to that. And so you hope that everything works out well and that the players here reach their ceilings and are impactful players on a championship team. As these guys get closer, you begin to evaluate if, hey, you know, is this a guy we can start moving around the diamond a little bit, like a Benny Zobrist? You know, and so you begin to evaluate those things. And, you know, there's always going to be attrition, and there's always going to be an instance where this is going to flip and we're going to be trading players to win championships. And so you can never have enough depth with that. And my experience is it always tends to work itself out. It doesn't always have to move as fast as it's moving in baseball. And so we'll work those things out as they come to pass.
Yeah. Brooks Baldwin is one example of a guy who's moved around. He's gotten a lot more comfortable, it seems, this season. There's been a lot of guys in the infield that are filling up those spots. He's played some outfield. He's filled in gaps all over the outfield. Is there anybody else, either on the team now or in the minors, that you guys are kind of targeting for the potential of a utility role, or is that still just playing itself out?
Yeah, it's playing itself out. Yeah. Those are conversations that Paul Yonish and Josh Barfield and Chris have all the time. But, you know, Brooks has done a great job. I mean, that's an example of a guy that got a taste last year and came up and was way more comfortable.
Yep.
And I think you're going to see a lot of that with our young core this year coming into next year. He reminds me of a young Ben Zobrist. I hope that it plays out that way.
That would be incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
On the outfield side of things, we'll keep whenever you need to. We'll cut off soon. But the outfield has obviously, you know, Luis Robert, the option this season, and then you've got Benintendi and Tauchman, who will both be under contract potentially. What are the possibilities for, you know, looking into the future? Right, two of those guys being veteran players, the infield being super young. What are the internal just options about adding to the outfield, whether it's, you know, from the free agency side or potentially from the trade side? Even.
No, I think we're always examining that. I think we're always examining that internally. Like, do we have some guys that might benefit moving to the outfield? And, you know, we had that in Kansas City with Alex Gordon.
Yeah.
You know, ended up being a Gold Glove left fielder. And at the time, you know, we took great criticism for that. So I think those possibilities are always out there. But again, you know, we're going to work diligently to evaluate every outfielder, you know, whether it's major league free agents or 20Ds or minor league free agents, guys that have been injured that are on a comeback. We'll do the very best that we can to, you know, have high ceiling players in those spots, or whether it could be, you know, platoon guys that, you know, that are, you know, work well together. We'll constantly be working to improve the 26-man roster in that aspect.
Yeah, awesome.
All right, well, looks like our time here is done. We appreciate you coming on with us so much. You know, hopefully we can touch base with you again at some point.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time. We hope with the talent acquisition that we got coming, that one of those rings that's on your finger right there ends up coming our way. We appreciate it. Thank you.
We're looking forward to
having it. Appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
Okay. All right. Well, two great interviews for us. Great information from both Connor and from Gene. And I'm really interested to see where things go in the off season, and you know, knowing the confidence that these guys have in this core that they're starting to build here, really is going to make things interesting.
Yeah, some great intel. We hope everybody enjoyed those interviews. Some big takeaways from me just off the bat there between Connor and Gene. Outfield. We have talked about this on our shows. You've got three veterans in the outfield, and Luis Robert is a veteran at this point. It's fair to say. I think there's an addition coming. I think there's going to be a move of one of Benintendi or Mike Tauchman, and you're going to see whether it's free agency. Connor McKnight kind of, you know, mentioned Cedric Mullins as like a reclamation, or it's a trade. I could see like a Willier Abreu from Boston, a guy that I've mentioned before. I think we're going to see a legitimate addition on the outfield side of things going into next season. And then the other takeaway, I would not be shocked to see the White Sox make one big splash in the bullpen. It does seem like there is a hesitancy because it's still, you know, a 60-win team at the end of the day. But while you're going to bring in a lot of
flyers to see how they compete, if they can earn a roster spot, I do think there's a real world where the White Sox bring in one higher-end reliever, even if it is kind of a buy-low candidate.
Yeah, you know, if the bullpen ends up being Jordan Leisure in the eighth and Grant Taylor in the ninth, then yeah, sure. Yeah. But, like, at the end of the day, you would want a more trusted, lockdown ninth-inning guy. Yeah. And especially, I'm not ruling out Grant Taylor going back into the starting rotation, and the organization seems to not be ruling it out either. So, you know, if he transitions back into that starting role, which, you know, I'd love it. He's an electric arm, and I'd love to see it in longer stints. But if he ends up being your ninth-inning guy, sure, that's great. But also, let's get a more proven guy that I'm not getting a little bit uneasy about when it's a one-run game and, you know, Grant Taylor is spiking curveballs. But, again, this is a very, like, first-world problem for a 60-ish win team. So we're not there yet where we're like, all right, we're a closer away from contending. No, this is like we're taking steps for the future and we're going to win games next year, but it's not like, all right, we need a closer right now to go out and win a World Series.
Yeah, having too many arms is definitely a good problem to have. You know, like we've talked about this before. We hope that Grant Taylor moves back to the rotation, but if that's not in the plans, or if they think that they need to build out his innings base a little bit more, that works perfectly fine. But if they go and find some sort of top end reliever, I'm good with that as well. We'll see what happens. Yeah. It's going to be a great offseason. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. I'm going to call my shot here a little bit based on one of those conversations. I think Tanner McDougal breaks camp and the starting rotation. I really do. I think there's a world he does it. It would be in a limiting fashion. I don't think he'll be throwing seven-inning starts, right? I think you're going to see him throw mostly five-inning starts for most of the year. But, like, I think there is a real chance Tanner McDougal breaks camp in the starting rotation and comes out of camp as that guy who just took that step and earns a spot. And he might just do it, man. And I think there's other guys that are going to do it. We also heard, you know, Connor mentioned earlier, there's a chance Noah Schultz could break camp.
Yeah.
You know, if he's healthy, there's also, you know, a possibility there. Interested to see like how that shakes out on the pitching side. I think there's going to be some piggybacking next year for sure on the pitching side. You got to protect these guys' arms. It's going to be really fascinating to see. You're going to see a lot of talented arms, but also a lot of talented arms that are capped around 120, 130 innings next season. So how they sort that out and how they get this talent up, but also protect them for the future, is going to be one of my top storylines heading into spring training.
Yeah, that's kind of actually one thing I've been wondering about. You know, with all the piggybacking stuff and with the innings limitations that have been put on guys, ultimately what you're trying to do, because you only have 13 roster spots for pitchers during the year, you can't afford to be piggybacking all the time. So that's kind of one thing that I've been wondering, how they're going to sort that out when it comes time for when you're trying to get a guy up to the majors throwing seven innings. How does that work out?
Yeah, I don't know. I can see a world where there's one or two designated piggyback guys in the bullpen, and it gets a little tricky because then you have six guys that are relied upon for all the other bullpen innings, right? So it's complicated to see, but like there's more than five guys that are going to be on this roster that are starter types, right? So then what do you do with those guys to make sure that they're still able to get the innings they need, but also not tax your bullpen too much all the time?
Yeah, and you know another thing that we haven't mentioned here, but we've mentioned countless of times before, is you've got three guys coming off of Tommy John surgery in Drew Thorpe, Mason Adams, and Kai Bush that all of them aren't going to be able to throw 180 innings like that next year. Yep. So, like, those guys are going to need piggybacks. Do we see one of them in a piggyback role? Do we see one of them shift into a bullpen role? Like, there's a lot of questions around just the overall makeup of the pitching staff next year, and I think it's going to be really fun to watch coming out of spring training, especially if Tanner McDougal makes a team, which I'm praying he does because he's absolutely earned a shot.
All right, so let's address the elephant in the room here that nobody has mentioned: Hagen Smith.
Yeah,
nobody's mentioned him today, and you saw him in the playoffs the other day, and there is 100% been some mechanical work done
100%
with him this year. And if you watch his starts from a couple of months ago to now, if you look, his body is a lot more closed off when he is in his motion, which is allowing him to generate more power. You saw in the playoff game the other day, he had 10 strikeouts to two walks. If he continues in that pace in the AFL, where are we looking for him when it comes to next year as well?
Soon in the rotation. It has to be, right? Because do you guys know how many innings he's at? I think he's at like 70, 75 innings off the top of my head here. Yeah. with the Arizona Fall League, hopefully another playoff game. He's going to get another playoff start for the Barons now, most likely, right? The Barons are heading into the championship. If they make it to game three, I think that would be him probably. So if he gets another playoff start and then he gets 20, 25 innings in AFL, right? If he gets over 100 innings this year, I'm not saying he's going to break camp, but, like, yeah. he could, there's a world. And if he doesn't, I still think he could easily get some starts within 2 months of the season next year, right? Like a June, July type of call-up. I don't know what it is exactly, but even with the ups and downs for Schultz and Smith this season, they're still going to be making their debuts next season one way or another. And they're still probably the two highest upside arms. Maybe Tanner McDougal can be thrown in there as well. You've got three arms that I think have a higher ceiling than anybody on the White Sox staff right now, right? I don't think that's crazy to say. Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot of variability in where they could end up being, but if you can get those three to the big leagues next year and even see, like, a taste of their upside, you're heading into 2027 with three of potentially your best arms being built up a little more.
All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and call it here because they're going to kick us out of the Line and Kugels area down here in a little bit. Yeah. It's been a lot of fun. It was super stressful for me setting up the tech side of things.
He crushed it.
Absolutely, props to him.
Thanks for running through the interviews with me. I appreciate that. Dylan, thanks for being here and hopping on here and for the moral support. Appreciate that.
Yep.
So we'll go ahead and call it, and we're going to go watch hopefully a White Sox winner.
For sure. Yep. And thank you all for just a wonderful 2025 season. It has been so much fun. We have taken our game to the next level at Future Sox, part of the Just Baseball Network now, which has been awesome. And we're just, you know, we're excited for what's to come. We think that as this team gets better, we're hoping we're getting better. We're always welcome to any feedback, and we appreciate the support from everybody.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Have a good one.